Okay, so on Daf Chavtet, we're around 8 lines from the top on Chavtet Amun Aleph. We're at the two dots, okay? Chavtet Amun Aleph, 29a, around 10 lines from the top. So the Gemara says Tana taught in a Braisa, which Tishrach HaMikvah Shel Grisim. So it means like this. The Mishnah said, when are you allowed to exit the Sukkah based on bad weather circumstances when it's raining? And the Tana of the Mishnah said, Mish Tishrach HaMikvah, when the parge gets ruined. So we're referring to that. So Tana the way I do this is the way I do this is you wait, please. Wait. Even the joke, wait for 10 minutes. Okay, wait. Please, everything. Wait for 10 minutes. So I'll pause periodically. Okay. So the Gemara says Tana Tana Braisa, Mishtishracha Mikvah Shel Grisin. It's a porridge of grisin. So Rashi, it's a type of bean. So Rashi points out the 10th narrow line. It like becomes ruined with even a little bit of rain. So it means it's on the lighter end of situation or the lower threshold to exit the sukkah. Abaye habakiyativ kami de Rav Yosef. So Abaye was sitting before Rav Yosef bimetalalta in the sukkah. So it's, I assume it's Rav Yosef's sukkah. Nashab zika, the wind blew, bikamaiti tzivuta, and then all these like thorns came down from the schach. Amar Lehu Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef said to the people who were there, "Panuli mani mihacha, get my kelim out of here. I'm out of here." So Amar Le Abaye. So Abaye said to Rav Yosef, and again, Abaye was a talmid of Rav Yosef. Amar Le Abaye, the Mishnah says when the porridge gets ruined, you just had like some thorns came down from the stock, whatever. No, okay, please. Say some Mishnah Mikvah. So Amar Le, so Rav Yosef said, "Ladidi, for me, kima da nida da toya. I'm very sensitive." To me, it's the equivalent of the mikvah getting ruined. And let's see a little bit of Rashi on this, on the around the 15th narrow line of Rashi. So Rashi says, Rav Yosef Mianine Dad Hava, who is a very sensitive person, to Tani Perak Arvi Psachim, we're learning Gemara in Psachim, and we had this in Daf Yomi, presumably, says, Shoshah Chayim Inan Chayim. There are three people whose lives are not lives, Harachmanim, people who are like overly merciful, Harachmanim, the people who are angry, Vanine Das, people who are sensitive. They can't withstand anything that's a little bit, you know, unpleasant. But Amar of Yosef, Hulu it now be. Rabbi Yosef said, I have all three of those things. So that's the piece with that. Okay, now who's got questions, comments, thoughts, what I just did? Anybody? You want to say something? Rashi? Yes, so if you look in Rashi, the one I just read, you see where it says Sivuta in Rashi? You see Sivuta, it's 10 cents hour long. You see Tzivuta? Around 10 narrow lines down. Are you on Chavtet Amun Aleph? Yeah, so 2 lines below that. Rav Yosef Menini Dad. You see it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody good? Okay. All right, any questions, comments, thoughts, anything I said? You're good. You're good, Abe. You're good, Yoder. Right.
The question was that he said if the soup is ruined, then you
do
it.
Right.
What if you what?
All right. Now, all right, let's see back on the Gemara. Now, I'm going back to the Gemara. Around 10 lines above where it gets wide, Chavtet Amun Aleph. So, Tan Rabbanan, Ayochel B'sukkah V'yardu G'shamim, he was eating the sukkah and rain came down, V'yarad. Now, V'yarad, the way they said in the Masifta Gemara, and the way this Rav Arya Leibowitz was saying, they would build a sukkah, let's say, on the roof of the house, whatever, so they're physically going down from the sukkah. I thought maybe this is a little bit too much of a drush, but you could say it's like when you make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, you're making like you're going up in Ruchnias. So you read it, you're going down. And in Achinami, some of the Mefarshim say the Sukkah is like being in Eretz Yisrael. So I thought, you know, V'yarad is like, you know, you're going down Ruchnias. That's why I thought it uses it that way. But the simple pshat, I guess, is you're going like, you know, from a loft or whatever. He descends from the Sukkah. Meaning, he was in the middle of the meal, he left. And then he's back in the house and he's eating, and now the rain stops. So the Gemara is saying he doesn't have to go back from Sukkah, now it stops. He wait till he's done with the Suda, and then whenever he wants to go back on the Sukkah, then he'll go back on the Sukkah. Or if at that point in time he can go back on the Sukkah. But the meal, he gets to complete in the Sukkah. He was sleeping, it means under the schach of the Sukkah. He's sleeping in the Sukkah and the rain came down. Again, he went down into the house. So we don't require him to go back into the sukkah ad shiur. Ad shiur means, we'll see if the Gemara is going to analyze it, but it means till the day is illuminated. That's what it means. So Rashi says, so we'll see in a minute. So the Gemara says, the question was asked in the base medrash, ad shiye or with an eye until he wakes up. Oh, ad shiye or until the day is illuminated. That's the question. Meaning that the Mishnayot and the Brises were originally learned, you know, orally. You're hearing it, you know, ba'al peh. You're not seeing a written text. So it was taught ad shiye or. Now, the truth is an ayin is pronounced differently than an aleph, but it's still easily confusable. So what? So is the is it that the Brisa is saying that he doesn't have to go until it's like a new day till sun rises, or is he saying until he wakes up? If he wakes up, then he has to go back in the sukkah. That's the question. So we're around 5 lines over. It gets wide on the Chavtet Amin Aleph. So Tashma. So the Gemara brings the writer from the following Brisa. Ad Shiyur B'Yaleh Amad Hashachar. The Brisa says that he doesn't have to go back in the sukkah. He's leaving out the first part of the Brisa, obviously. Ad Shiyur till it's illuminated, B'Yaleh Amad Hashachar, the like dawn comes. So the Gemara says Tarti. Both of those Shiyur are different Shiyur. Ad Shiyur means that the eastern horizon is light already. B'Yaleh Amad Hashachar is like dawn and so much darker. Those are two different Zmanim. So Ela Ema, the way I should understand the Brisa is Ad Shiyur V'Yaleh Amad Hashachar. So the different ways to understand this Pshat in the Gemara, but the way Rashi takes it, it's like a bifurcated, a two level approach. That in order to go back to the sukkah, again, he was sleeping in the sukkah, rains, he went back to the house. Now he's snoozing away. So he doesn't have to go back on the sukkah until both of the following requirements are fulfilled. Ad Shiyur, he wakes up as opposed to other people waking him up. V'Yaleh Amad Hashachar, in addition to which, it's the dawn has come. Let's see Rashi on this. 1 second. Yeah, so the Rashi is lower than where we are. It's around the fifth, like equal to the fifth wide line in the Gemara. Ella al korcha shir katani v'haski gemar ad shiur mi'la m'shachar. In other words, he wakes up and it's after m'shachar. La puki mi'kis mi'shena toba laila. If he woke up during the night, they matrichim. We don't make him go back in the sukkah. V'mala shachar, and if dawn came v'lo niyar and he wasn't awake, him, so we don't wake him up. So it means, so in order to have the obligation to go back in the sukkah, it has to A, wake up, and B, it has to be after dawn. Okay, if you're lacking any one of those, then the way Rashi is learning, he's not obligated to go back in the sukkah. Okay, let's just pause for a second. So the two elements we learned were that if you were eating a meal in a rain, then you go back in the house, you can finish the meal in the house. And then if you were sleeping in the sukkah in a rain and you went back to the house, you can continue sleeping until you wake up and Allah Shafar has come up. Okay.
Is this the first night or any night?
What? I can't hear you. Speak louder.
Is this the first night or any night? Any other night?
Any night.
But also the first night. Okay.
All right. Okay. So in terms of eating, we definitely pass in this way. In terms of eating, once you go into the house, then we say you can finish the meal. That's definitely the way we pass in terms of eating. All right. Now, all right, let's see. I wanted to look it up, but I mentioned this to you, and I heard Rabbi Arya Lieb was mentioning it as well. There was a famous case with the Rav. The way I remember the story was, it was on the first night of Sukkot, I think, is that he went back into the house and he went to sleep, and then his father woke him up to go back into the sukkah. The way Rabbi Arya Lieb was telling him that the son, the boy, he was a youngster at the time. He had a whole shakla kari with his father about it, you know, about but that's the story. Okay, let's see back in the Gemara. Sleeping is the same the first night, or the obligation of sleep is no different the first night than any other night. Okay, let's see.
And it started four.
This is a month that it happened.
100%.
Oh, if it would happen.
Okay, where it could happen. Yeah. Okay, now you went into the house.
Yeah, I would want to wait. Once you made the kiddush, I would at that point eat at least a kazayas of bread.
Okay, you made a mosti, you had a kazayas of bread.
Right.
Now it's
I would have a kibbutz then. In other words, you want to have more than
two kibbutz.
More than a kibbutz. So
two and a half
kibbutz. Okay.
Two and a half kibbutz.
Okay.
Now you go into the house.
Right.
You have your soup and you have your appetizer. And you're now quiet, beautiful outside.
Right.
Dry. Did you go outside to continue your meal and your chadamazon?
Yeah.
You have another issue.
Yosef, I knew you. Chilikov, thank you so much.
You have another issue.
It's coming. Yes, it's coming.
Do you
have an answer?
There.
Wait, one second. Let me read this one. Bob, Chilikov. Bob, the last volume.
Stay in the house.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, the only issue is the first. The first night is he's asking the first night. One second. Give me 1 second. Okay, so he says. Yeah. Okay, so he says here like this. He says, Okay, so the Rama says about Laila Rishon Asirthal Kazai Pasukka, Afim Kham Yordan, even it's raining, the Kaddish Pasukka Kishin is Marnal Sukkah. Then the Mishnah Berurah goes down, and then he says that, again, so you'll make the Kiddush and you'll eat in the house. If the rain stops, so he's saying, certainly, if you didn't bench, you have to go back in. In other words, he's saying that you should go back and eat. He cements the Shirik Beitza, a little bit more than a Beitza in the Sukkah. In other words, like, according to some, it doesn't have a din of a sukkah if it's raining. So I want to go back and eat it in the sukkah when it's not raining anymore. Now let me see one second. Right. Some poskim hold you're not yotze if you eat it when it's raining. That's if you didn't go to sleep already. If you already went to sleep, then he doesn't have to get out. If mitztayer is chayev, so he's already yotzei b'zachil. In other words, if he's sleeping, he's mitztayer. So if I say mitztayer is chayev, he already was yotzei when he ate it in the rain. Mitztayer patur, ain't tzrich lakum min amita, then I don't have to do it. Okay, so that's the answer to your question. All right, so you would go back into the sukkah lakor and you'd have you'd have more than a kibetz of bread in the sukkah. No, again, in other words, again, in other words, was it raining when he had the first kibetz or not?
Yeah, it was raining.
So with Michael's example, when he had the first kibetz, it was raining. So according to some poskim, it doesn't count. So, but then he went back into the house. So he's asking this. Now it stops raining. You have to go back. So, okay, that's this. Okay, let's see back on the Gemara. All right, now. Okay, so I'm back in the Gemara around three lines from above where it gets wide on the Chaf Tetam and Aleph. Now, if you remember, the Mishnah gave a famous mashal. It says, the Mishnah yesterday said, mashal ma dovar demeh. If it rains, what is it similar to? Leved shabalim zo kos l'rabo, to a servant who comes to dilute the cup of wine for his master, v'shafak lo kiton al panav, and the master throws the cup of water on the servant's face. So let's see back in the Gemara. Mashal ma dovar demeh, yibay lehu, mi shafak mi, who it was pouring on who? Meaning, is the pshat in the Mishnah that the servant accidentally spilled the water on the master? And if that's the case, the pshat would be that it means Hashem is not happy with our avoda. In other words, like the way we're doing sukkah, he's unhappy with it. So it's raining. It's like the servant that was a lousy servant. He doesn't do things right. He pours water on you. So that's the scene of the rain. Or is it that a Kaddish Baruch Hu, is it the master is pouring rain on is pouring the water on the servant? And the difference. So he says Tashma, the Tanya Shafakul Rabo Kitonal Parav. If the master, the Brisa says that the master poured the container of water on the face of the servant, but Amarlo, the master said to the servant, "Efshi b'shimushcha, I don't want your service." That's the pshat in the Mishnah. In other words, Hashem is not a good sign. Either way, it's not a good sign. He's clearly unhappy, but he's saying, "I don't want your service." So it doesn't have to necessarily relate to the way we're doing sukkahs, but I don't want your service. And we spoke about the Gra yesterday that it's an opportunity for us to Imam took the dinim, to dilute the dinim, and we're not getting that opportunity. All right. Now, the first white line downstairs on Chaf Tet Amud Aleph. So Tana Rabbanan, we learned the Braisa, Bizman Shachama Lokeh, when the Chama is Lokeh, according to most Mepharshim, they take it as like a solar eclipse. But it means like the the son is in some way getting impaired. That's a bad siman for the whole world. What is this similar to? It's like a king who made a big banquet for his servants, and he put a lantern in front of them to enjoy the suda. He was angry with the servants, and he said to his servant, take away the lantern and leave them in the dark. Okay, we'll see in a minute. Now, let's do a few more lines, then I'll come back. I'll explain a little bit, okay? This is on the third white line. Tanya, we learned the Bryce, so Rav Meir Omer calls the man Shemorot Lokin, Siman Rather, so name Shal Yisrael. When the Morot are Loket, now the Gemara is going to say the sun is the Goyim and the moon is the Jews. So the Torah means that the moon, you have a lunar eclipse, that's a Siman Rather, so name Shal Yisrael, is a euphemism for the Jewish people. It means a Siman for the bad Siman for the Jews. Because they're accustomed to, you know, getting a lot of, you know, oppressive things happening to them. Mashal is so fair, Shaba Lubeda Sefer. It's like a teacher comes to the cheder with a strap in his hand. Me the way, who's going to be worried? So like the way Reb Leibowitz was saying, you have one student, he's always misbehaving. Like he's the one who's got to worry now. He says, Mishra Gilo Topical Yom Bayom, the way, the one who's always getting beaten, he's the one who gets it. So it means the Jewish people have to be worried. Now, the difficulty with this is like you can have a luach and figure out when there's gonna be a solar eclipse, when there's gonna be a lunar eclipse. So one shot I saw, they had in the arts where they quoted from the Ruch Laner, and Rabbi Leibowitz also quoted this. He wants to say that when he says Chamal is loke, where the moon is loke, it means that that's an inauspicious time. It means like there are certain times of the year, like, you know, like another person in the base medrash, Rav Yonatan Drori, said, like the Gemara in Brachot says, Kael Zawain B'chol Yom. Hashem is angry every day in a certain point in time. That's when Bilam first called Israel. But it means it's an inauspicious time, and you have to really be careful at that point in time. Those are the simanim, you know what I mean? So when the Chamal is loke, we'll see it as bad time for the Goyim. And then they quoted in the article, they quote from the Arot Debash by Rav Yonatan Ivershutz. He says different shot. He says it doesn't mean an eclipse. He says it means it could be like sunspots or something like that. That something is outside the ordinary with the moon or the sun. Or right, let's see further in the Gemara around the sixth very wide line. Tanu Rabbanan Bisman Shachamal Lokeh. When the sun have a solar eclipse, Siman Ralo Dekokabim. That's a bad siman for the Goyim. Levana Lokeh. If the moon is a lunar eclipse, Siman ra l'sonim shel Yisrael. That's bad siman for the Jews. Nesh Yisrael monim levana. The Jews count by the moon, and means it's like, you know, they always say like the moon like it waxes and wanes. And the Jewish people, you know, sometimes things are down, but then they always come back. And he says, so he says, lokeb mizra. If the eclipse takes place when the sun is on the eastern horizon, like near sunrise, presumably, that's a siman ra l'yoshvei Mizrach, because they had siman for the people who were in the east. The Marav, if it takes place when it's in the west, siman ra l'yoshvei Marav. The Emtzarakia, siman ra l'chol am kulo, in the middle of the sky, siman bad siman for the whole world. Kanav domim l'dam, if the face of the sun looks like blood, like red, cherev ba l'yolam, siman like there's going to be warfare. L'sak, if it looks like, now he's saying the sun or the moon here. He says the sun, yeah. The sack, if it's dark like a sackcloth, and Rashi says it's like shachur, I think. So he says chitzei rav ba'inulam, sign that arrows of hunger come to the world. Luzu, it's like reddish, dark, whatever. Cherev chitzei rav ba'inulam. Now, lakav chnisato, if the eclipse, the solar eclipse takes place, chnisato, chnisato means the sun is going below the horizon near sunset. So if near sunset there's an eclipse, Puranot Shohelavo, the punishment will be delayed. So Rashi says on the fourth white line downstairs, in other words, the sun is like traversed across the sky from our viewpoint, and then at the very end of the last moment, you see an eclipse. That's a siman that the punishment will also be delayed, like it was delayed. B'siato, if the eclipse is near sunrise, the maheret labo, that means it's going to happen quickly. And Rashi says, in other words, as soon as the sun shows up, I see the clips. That's a simon that it's going to happen right away. Some say punk faker, just the opposite. Let's look at Rashi, the fifth white line. If you have the eclipse near sunset, then it's coming right away. In other words, there's no opportunity for the sun to shine at all. In other words, it's like at the end of the day. In other words, it's right near the end of Shkia. So it's going to happen right away. If an eclipse happens near sunrise, in other words, there's an eclipse now, but there's going to be a lot of time when it's shining. So that's a different way to say you have more time. So either way, back to the Gemara. You don't have any nation that gets sort of smitten. Shein Elohe Elokeima, whose gods are not also smitten with it, Lashon Chol. Shenemar B'chol Olam Yisrael Yaseh Shvatim. That Hashem says, I'm going to do judgment with all the gods of Egypt. And Rashi says, this is six lines from the bottom, Elohe Saraha Militz Ba'ado. Like he says, it's like the Malach that's interceding on their behalf. And Samael Shasar Shal Esav. Like Samael was the Sar of Esav. All right, let's see back in the Gemara. Ubizman Shi Israel Othim Ritzono Shalakom, and Klal Israel follow the Ritzon Hashem, Ein Mityarim Mikolelu. They don't have to be worried about any of these things. That fits in well with what we were saying before from the Ruchlan Air. It's just saying like it's propitious for something bad happening. Shenemar Komar Hashem, El Derek Hagoyim Al Tilmadu, Umiyatoda Shaman Al Techatu. He says, like, don't be afraid from the ways of the Goyim, don't learn from the Goyim, and don't be afraid of the signs in heaven, because the Goyim will be afraid from it. So the Gemara says, the Goyim have to be afraid, but the Jews don't have to be worried about it. You know, this Rabbi Arya Leibowitz, he mentioned, it says by Makach Choshech in Mitzrayim, it says, in Makar Choshech, lo kam ish tachtav shloshet yamim. So what does it mean, lo kam ish tachtav? So Shushan Mikri said nobody got up like from what was underneath them, and it's hard to understand. So he quoted from, I think it was the Ketava Kabbalah, he says, lo kamu ish tachtav, that they were so afraid that they didn't stand up. In other words, tachtav from techat. Techat can mean to be afraid. Lo kamu ish tachtav. They were so scared, they were afraid to even stand up. Anyway, but that's the piece with that. Okay. Any questions, comments, to us on anything?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Regarding the moon, I mean,
you know, everybody sounds so quiet. Do I have to adjust it? Where, how do I adjust the volume? Okay. Here, let me see. All right, I'm getting technical help here.
Can you hear me?
Wait a minute, working on it. Oh, no, you turned it off. Wait.
I can hear you, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, okay. I hear you perfectly.
Okay, well, now we're better. Okay, go. Okay.
So both the Muslims and the Hindus certainly are Avodah Zarah, they both follow the lunar calendar. So how does that work with their...
Muslims and the Hindus, yeah. So David's asking that we said the Goy, the Gemara says that the Goyim are linked to the sun and the Jews are linked to the moon. So I would say we don't care what they personally do. It's the way the Torah sets forth the way it's working out. In other words, the Torah compares from the Torah's perspective, they're linked to the sun. From the Torah's perspective, we're linked to the moon. They can do whatever they like, but that's the way the Torah regards it.
So, but the Muslims, we don't consider Avodah Kechavim, or we do, the Muslims.
So that's a big, long discussion, you know, about whether the Muslims are or not. Like there's an argument to say that they're monotheists, but I think there's somewhat of a discussion in the postgame with the whole thing with this.
Okay, but Hindus certainly are. Hindus, of course, certainly are. I mean, there's no question.
They're certainly of the Avodah Zarah. I mean, the way I remember Lorna speaking about this many years ago, like he said it was Machlokin Rashi and the Rambam. Each felt that the other one was the Avodah Zarah. The Rambam felt that the Christians were of the Avodah Zarah, and Rashi held that the Muslims were of the Avodah Zarah. but the but I'd have to review it all. But you know, that's the way. I mean, the issue is, you know, is it a true monotheism what they believe in? That would be, that's what.
But it's is the halacha lemaaseh, it's an issue to go into a church. But it's, I don't think it's an issue to go into a mosque, is it?
It could be. You may be right. I have to look into it a little bit more. All right?
Okay.
All right. Everybody good? Okay, let's see further in the Gemara. Now, yeah. So, I'm looking. One second. Okay, so we're 6 lines from the bottom on Chaf Tet Amud Aleph. Okay, so Tan Rabbanan, Mishpila Arbat Rim Chamal Lokeh. For four things, the chama is local, the chama, whether it's an eclipse or it's impaired. Now Rashi brings down on these four things. Let's see the four things. Yes, Rashi says 5 lines from the bottom, lo shamati tam b'davar. He says, I didn't hear a reason why these four things are connected. But this Rabbi Leibowitz is quoting from the Aruch Lanair, who tries to relate all four of these things to the sun. We'll see in a minute. He says, if the Av Bezdin passes away and he's not, this proper hesped wasn't given to him. Who remembers in Tanakh? Who didn't get a proper hesped in Tanakh? And it comes up. Who remembers? Does anybody remember? Anybody?
Is it in Ta or in Nach?
In Nach. In Nevi'im. All right. Nevi'im Rishonim. Anyway, so remember, it was at the end of Sefer Shmuel. Remember that the punishment comes in time David HaMelech, because Shaul was a nispad kalacha, so that whether a hesped wasn't given for him. Anyway, so the way that the Aruch Lanair says, and this is the way Rabbi Leibowitz is saying it, the Av Bezdin, he's compared to the sun. It was like Ubash Shemesh v'Zarach HaShemesh. He's like the Gadol Ador, and so he's like the sun. So if he's not nispad kalacha, means people aren't appreciating him, so then the sun goes down. For a betrothed woman who cries in the city, she's being raped, nobody comes to save her. So here he said that at night, you know, you expect, you know, people may not see or hear or something like that, but during the day, you expect that they would come. But they're not being Moshia her. They're treating the day like night. In other words, like, you know, people are around. She's Ba'ir. So they're treating the day like night, so the sun gets taken away from them. Yal Mishkav Zachur, for homosexual conduct. And here he said, again, this is the Aruch Lanair, Rav Leibowitz said it was like because of the time of the Mabul, so the sun didn't work the way it normally works, and they had, you know, Kishchi Kobasaret or Koala Arex. And Yal Shnei Achim Shishpach Damam Kechad, for two brothers who were killed at the same time, he related to the sun and the moon, so you know, like the were Shnei Morot. Someone was connected to that. Okay, now Uvishvil Arba Azri Morot Lokim. The four things on the Morot get impaired, and the Morot Rashi says is the moon and the stars. Al Kotfe Plaster. People who write, for, you know, counterfeit documents. Rashi says 4 lines from the bottom. Shtarot Bezviyafim Umechavei Amal Shem Dofi Al Adam Lato Bishmo Mashlo Siva. In other words, You ghostwrite something false in somebody's name. Al kotei plaster v'am idei eder checker. People give false testimony. V'al magadli behem adaka be'eretz Yisrael. People who raise like sheep and goat in Eretz Yisrael. And the Rashi brings down the 3 lines from the bottom. Akivita aretz yichol shamram yilropis techaverim. That they destroy the land because they can't guard them. That they're not going to be grazing in their friend's property, and I think Chazal made Xera not to raise Behemoth Daka in Eretz Israel. See back in the Gemara, yeah, I'll quote Se Ilanot Tovot, and people who chop down a fruit tree. The Ilanot here is a fruit tree. And Rashi brings down, even if it's their fruit tree, Shemash Titinhein, they're like destroyers. They look like they're like kicking, like rebelling against Hashem. Hashem gives this wonderful fruit tree, and they're chopping down the fruit tree. Now, cut down a fruit tree is allowed in the Torah. You're not allowed to cut down the fruit tree. But then Rabbi Leibowitz was saying there's also, like, I think a little in the Chachman Anistar with this. He said, and maybe some of you heard, he said there was a shul in Brooklyn where they built the whole shul around the fruit tree. They didn't want to chop it down. There's different shitot about under what circumstances can you cut down the fruit tree. And we'll see that I have a story here to tell about a fruit tree in a bit. And he says, Okay, let me get my story about the fruit tree here, and then we'll say a little bit more on second. Okay. All right. Now, all right. He says, in addition to the biblical prohibition against cutting down fruit-bearing trees, the Taz notes that the practice is dangerous and will not see any blessing from the action. In other words, besides that, there's a law in the Torah, but like he's saying, it's like you know, from the Ruchdin level, it's dangerous to cut down the fruit tree. He says, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger was asked the following question. So that's also, that's the Aruch Lanier. I was just quoting the Aruch Lanier, so that's the Aruch Lanier. Here he's quoting from the Binyan Siyam, that's the Shas and Shubas. The government required a person to own a home before he could obtain a marriage license. And the only place in town to build a home was on a field owned by a non-Jew that contained fruit-bearing trees. Is it permitted in this circumstance to cut down the trees? So he needs a house to get married, and the only place he could find is a field where there's a fruit-bearing tree that's owned by a goyim. Rav Ettlinger initially cites the opinion of the Taz, who writes that the prohibition is violated only if the tree is cut down in destructive fashion. But if it's cut down as a constructive act, for example, to build a house in its place, it is permitted. That's what the Taz says. Rav Yaakov Emden, however, writes, now remember, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger is in Germany. Rav Yaakov Emden was also in Germany. He says, however, writes that although Rabbi Yaakov Emden, I think we went to Amsterdam, not Germany, okay? So Rabbi Yaakov Emden, however, writes that although the Taz's comments are correct regarding the prohibition, as far as the danger is concerned, it doesn't matter whether the tree is cut down in a destructive manner or a constructive manner. In other words, he wants to say, even if you technically avoid doing an aveira by cutting down the fruit tree, on a ruchni level, like you're creating like sakana for yourself. So although Rabbi Ettlinger demonstrates that halakha does not follow the ruling of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, Rabbi Yaakov Emden is the one who said, you know, don't go ahead and do it. Nonetheless, he searches for ways to minimize the severity of the act. One way is to uproot the tree with its roots and replant in another location. By uprooting the whole tree with the roots and then replant it, that's another thing. A second method is to find a non-Jew to remove the tree. Thus, in the specific case addressed by Rav Ettlinger, he advised that the non-Jew be told that the interested buyer, in other words, the Jew wants to buy the land to build a house, but there's a fruit tree. There's a fruit tree there. So he says the non-Jew should be advised that the Jew doesn't want to buy it if there's a fruit-bearing tree on the property, and they should be moved to another location. So in other words, so he's saying, like, get rid of the fruit trees and move
it. Makes it a condition of the sale.
Right. But in other words, the goy is going to do it. So they have the non-Jew do everything. And the way he writes it here, I don't know what's in the chuba, he says not to destroy it. He says he'll move it to another property. So he's doing it both. So the non-Jew's doing it, and non-Jew's moving it to another property. And that way he wants to get out of it with the fruit-bearing tree. All right.
But how can the Jew control if the non-Jew is replanting it?
Yeah, that I don't know. But that's what he should say to the non-Jew, okay? All right, let's see back on the Gemara. Okay, so two lines to the bottom. We feel our about bring nixei balei batim them serim the malchut. For four things, person's property gets like seized by the government. Amashe shtar pruim, the person leaves like a paid up IOU note. Now, the way it should work is when you lend money, so if you remember from Seder Nezikin, once the debt is paid up, so then I should rip up the shtar and give it to the, or give it to Loban. He'll rip it up, but in other words, that should be ripped. But apparently the debt was paid and the document is still hanging around. I'm keeping these documents around my house. That's bad news. And the Gemara, and Rashi quotes the Gemara, it's Rashi says, he says, they're leaving those documents around because they plan to like you know collect them and collect another time with it. That's the way it's going. He says, and for people who lend money usuriously, and the Gemara says that if you lend the money usuriously, so it's going to end up in the hands of the poor people. In other words, like the government will seize it and the money will go to the poor people. He says, and then turn page on the top line on top 10 of days. For people who were in a position to protest, over Yaveira, and they didn't protest. They were afraid and they didn't protest. Well, whatever the Yaveira is that's going on. Rashi says, Whatever the Aver was going on in their generation, they're wealthy people, and their words would be heard and listened to. And people were afraid of them, they held them in high esteem, and they didn't protest. So again, this is why people are losing their property. So in other words, in each case, they're like misusing their wealth. In other words, the first thing is they're like dishonest with the shtar pruim, mava deribit. They're lending money with interest is also a bad thing. And here they could have protested, and they're important because of their wealth. Bial shaposkim tzedaka barabim hein anotnim, and the people, they promise to give money for tzedaka publicly to aniyim, and then they don't fulfill their obligation. Now, I think Rav Leibowitz mentioned, why does it say poskim tzedaka barabim? So he said that there's two elements. That one is like when the person agrees to give it, it's like he has an obligation to give. It's like a neder. But secondly, means like they're having like they're trying to raise money for the tzibur, some communal fund, and they have to get to a certain level. And the person says he's going to do it the way Rav Leibowitz was saying. So now they think they've reached their goal, and they really haven't. So he's impacting, you know, on the whole effort. Okay, now. For four things, people's property like dissipates, it disappears. Al kovshei sachar sachir is like I owe money to a worker and I keep pushing him up, come back tomorrow, you know, push. Al oshkei sachar sachir, that's when Bafal, in other words, with the first case, eventually I'll pay him after he comes back a million times, but that's bad. The second case is Oshkei Sechar Sechir. I'm not paying him at all. I'm stiffing him. And then Baal Shaporkin Ol Me'al Sabreim and Otni Me'al Chavreim. Like I take obligations that I have and I dump it on other people. He says Ve'al Gasad Ruach for arrogance. But Gasad Ruach Kenegakum. Gasad Ruach, arrogance is equal to all the other Avera put together. He says, and Rashi brings down last Rashi, Shmit Gaim and Mistari Malachim Bishil Oshram. And that was going well, look who I am. So he says here, Gasaru Kenek Kulam, Ababa Anavim, during the humble people, Ktiv, Ba'anavim Yeshu Aretz, Vinhan Gua Rov Shalom. The Anavim will inherit the land and they'll enjoy like the peace. Okay, let me just do another piece and then I'll pause for some questions, then we'll move on. Now, going back earlier in the Gemara, we had about when the rain comes down. We said that if it rains to ruin the food, you're exempt from the mitzvah sukkah and eat in the house because mitzvah tires patrim in a sukkah. One's exempt from dwelling in the sukkah if it causes them distress. And he quotes earlier, the Rush said that this exemption does not apply on the first night of sukkahs. That's like the whole thing. Now, the Mishnah says that when one is forced to leave due to rain, it is a bad omen, or is akin to a master who spills a pitcher of water in the face of a servant trying to serve him. The Braisa adds that one is exempt from eating the sukkah during the rain, even if it was only raining heavily enough to ruin a dish of beans, which ruins easily in the rain. Now, the Smag asserts this criterion applies even to one who's not eating a bean dish. The sages estimated that once it is raining heavily enough to ruin a bean dish, there is sufficient discomfort to exempt everyone from sitting in the sukkah, regardless of the type of food that he is eating. The Gemara adds that if due to a rainstorm, one left his sukkah and continued his meal in his house, he need not return to his sukkah until he finishes his meal, even if it stops raining. Since interrupting one's meal to return the sukkah is bothersome, one is exempt from doing so, and in the general rule, mitztayer patrim in a sukkah. In other words, I'm going to be mitztayer to go back to the sukkah now, so mitztayer patrim in a sukkah, I don't have to do this. The Rama writes that one who is exempt from dwelling in the sukkah, i.e. due to rain, and continues to dwell there, does not acquire any reward, but his actions, rather, he's disparagingly labeled as a hedyot for trying to perform a mitzvah from which he's exempt. In other words, this is a tricky issue. You see, the issue comes like when I'm more stringent than the halacha requires. So here, let's say it's raining, and I want to be firmer. I'll stay in the sukkah even though it's a rainstorm. So he's called a hedyot, like a boor. So now, the Bikur Yaakov, again, that's Rabbi Yaakov Etlinger. We're getting here. So I mentioned the Aruch Lanair that I mentioned before. Which sefer was it? I mentioned the sefer before. The Binyan Sion, right. So we had the Aruch Lanair, the Binyan Sion, now we have Bikur Yaakov. It's also Rabbi Yaakov Etlinger. See, Rabbi Yaakov Etlinger wrote a lot on Sukkot. That's why it is. So he says here, Bikur Yaakov maintains the Ramaz criticism of one who eats in the Sukkah when exempt only applies to one who eats the sukkah in a state of distress, such as during a rainstorm. However, one who interrupts his meal and returns to his sukkah after the rain has ended is praised rather than criticized, since he does not experience discomfort during the performance of the mitzvah. In other words, he's not included to do because that's called mitzvah. But if he chooses to do, we would call him a hediyot for going back into the sukkah. The Sefer Birkas Abaye suggests that the Ramah's criticism applies only to the exemption of rain, since it signifies Hashem's disapproval with our performance of the mitzvah, for it signifies a master who refuses the service of his servant and spills water on him. However, one who exerts himself and sits in a sukkah under other discomforting circumstances, such as when he's suffering from the cold or an illness, is not admonished. The Marashag suggests that one who sits in a sukkah during a rainstorm is criticized because he has no right to sacrifice the mitzvah of Simchas Yantiv, rejoicing on the festival, by sitting in an uncomfortable sukkah, and he's halakhically exempt from doing so. Accordingly, he defends the actions of several renowned Hasidic rabbis who ate in the sukkah even during the rain. He explains that due to their truly outstanding devotion to the mitzvah sukkah, they experience more simchas yantiv when sitting in the wet sukkah than when they would if they were to eat in the house. And therefore, the exemption of mitzvah did not apply to them. So that's the piece with that. Okay. Any questions, comments, thoughts, anything you did so far? Yeah, I think anybody. It's like lo talim pulat sachirit ba'yichai boker, but yomo titain scharo. The Torah says each day, if the wages do that day, you have to pay him that day. So that's back in the Gemara. Hadron lacha yashen yashikoa to everybody who completed another parak in Daf Yomi, and let's keep, we're on a roll. Okay, now it's Lulav HaGazel, a very famous parak, and we'll keep moving. So Lulav HaGazel b'yavesh pasul. So the Tana Mishnah says, now here he's talking about lulav. He's going to talk about each one of the arba minim, but he takes up lulav first. Then he'll go to Aravot Hadassim and Esrogim. Lulav HaGazel, lulav is stolen. So Rashi says, Gazel, the third line in the Rashi, in the Mishnah, pasul klatem lachem ki bishalachem. It has to be yours. So if it's stolen, it doesn't belong to you. All right. Now, Vayavesh pasul, if it's dried out, it's also pasul. So Rashi says, I need mahuda. Rashi puts pasul exactly gandayu, but Tosfos says it need hadar. Tosfos says it's definitional. In other words, each one of the minim are only called hadar if certainly lulav is not yavesh. There's a lot of drush on the yavesh. You know, I think the Yerushalmi learns. Tosfos must bring this down here, or else elsewhere later on he brings it down. So, Tosfos says that yavesh is pasul because you need. It says like as you run a new kolatzayar, then all the trees in the forest will sing, and a dead tree can't sing to a kadosh baruch hu. Lo amitim yahaluka. So there's a piece of Torah. This is from Rav Blum. He unfortunately passed away at the beginning of this COVID outbreak. He writes that, like Derek Drush, he wants to say that, like, as long as a Jew is alive, he's got some moisture in him. In other words, every Jew has got like a little bit of Torah in him. So as long as it's like a drop of Torah in him, you can restore him to the Avodas Hashem. But if it's like dried and it's dead, you know, then nothing. But dead means dead. Anyway, so let's see back in the Gemara. The Vayavesh Pasol, Shal Asher Rav Shal Yirani Dacha Pasol. Now, Asher is a tree that's worshipped as Avodah Zarah. Yirani Dacha is when the town has been condemned to be destroyed because of Avodah Zarah. So that's Pasol. So it's Pasol. So the Gemara is going to learn that you need a shear for the lulav. And since it's Chayv Srefa, so you don't have the shear. In other words, you're obligated to burn it. So we don't view it as having the right shear. He says, Niktam Rosho, if like the tip of it has been clipped off, nifritsu alav, if the leaves have been clipped, pasul, that's pasul. And you know that, obviously, like one of the things, the aleph is when you examine the lulav, you look at the middle center leaf and make sure it's, you know, it's together and everything's in good shape with that center leaf. He says, nifridu alav kasher, if the leaves are all separated out, so it's kasher, the Tanakam says kosher. Rabbi Yehuda says, under those circumstances, you should tie it to keep it all together. Sine Hara Barzel Kasherot. So Hara Barzel is a place in Eretz Israel. Sine Hara Barzel, the lulavim there, and very short leaves, but they're Kasherim. Lulav Sheshbo Shoshat Fachim Tilanebo Kasher. Lulav has three Tzvachim. So the Gemara is going to say that we don't know this yet. It means that it really needs four tefachim. In other words, it needs the shidra, could be three tefachim, and then another tefach. So it's going to come out, lulav, kishbo shosh tefachim, ukhide lanebo. In other words, it has three tefachim and enough to be menanea, which is really four tefachim, then it's kasher. And that's the Rav Kahati had that. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Rashi says the second line, kidin lanebo, farshbimor shosh tefachim tea shidra, kineged orko shel hadas. So it has to be at least three tefachim, like the same length as the hadas. The tefach yoter, an additional tefach, to be able to, like, you know, wave it, to come on. Malo mori, malo maybe, let's ruho rao, it's falling in Horai. All right, let's see in the Gemara. So the Gemara says,
can I ask a question?
For you anytime. Yeah, what's up?
Thank you. You said something before about a shear and burning it and the asherah and the ear honey.
Right.
I didn't understand that part.
In other words, if it's an Asherah tree, you're obligated to destroy the Asherah when you enter Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara learns the Asherah in time Moshe Rabbeinu. So when you come into Eretz Yisrael, it says, Vashirehem tisrafun ba'esh. There are Asherah trees you should burn. And Irani Dachad, you're also destroyed with Saraftada year. You have to burn down the whole city. Unfortunately, like in the West, I just heard on the news tonight, they've had the fires going and the fire just burnt down the city that would have been from the gold rush, Greenville or something like that. And they showed on the news and it was like burnt down to a crisp. So that's what you're obligated to do with the Irani Dachad. So Mamela, it doesn't have the shear because it's Mechuyev, and it's the Chitute Mechtat Shear, the Gemara says. It's like the shear are all ground up. In other words, we view it as like burnt already. So you don't have the
shear. It doesn't have the shear of the four tefachim.
Right. Okay. All right. Let's see back on the Gemara. Okay. So the Gemara says, Kapasik Bitani means that the Mishnah is like paskening the halacha without qualification. Kapasik Bitani, Loshna Abiyom Tov Rishon, Veloshna Abiyom Tov Sheni. So we're focusing on the first halacha in the Mishnah, Lulav Agazel, the stolen Lulav. So from the statement in the Mishnah, it sounds like Lulav Agazel is possible all 7 days of Sukkot. And the Yom Tov Sheni means any day after the first day. Mishnah Miyabesh, Hadar Bayina Balechia. So by Yabesh, I understand, it has to be Hadar, that I understand. He says, El Gazul, Bishlemi Yom Tov Rishon, Dechtiv Lachem, Yishalachem. So on Yom Tov Rishon, it says, Lachem, Lachem, it has to be yours, so that I understand. El Biyom Tov Sheni Yamayla, why can't I use Lulav Gazul? Now, this Gemara assumes now there's Machlok in the Gemara and Baba Kama. If I seal something, and the owner makes Yeush, and this, you're going to have here, this Sugya, there's a whole piece here in the Gemara and Sukkah about this, but the Gemara has a discussion. When does the person get kinyan on it? Let's say the victim makes yeish on the property. So one opinion holds that I stole a TV set from Reuven, and the TV set was worth, let's say, $500. And then Reuven makes yeish. So according to one opinion, once he makes yeish, now I own the TV set. I still owe Reuven $500, but I'm the owner of the TV set. And according to another opinion, Yeush alone is not enough. I need Yeush and Shinui Rishut. And the Gemara has also Shinui Balin, but Shinui Rishut. It has to go to like somebody else. In other words, it has to be Yeush, and then it has to go to somebody else's possession. So this Gemara holds that Yeush is enough for it. So here, when I steal the property, and then the owner makes Yeush. So let's see back in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, so the first day, let's see. So I need Shalachem. So I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Yochai, mitzvah haba aveira. So that would be a mitzvah that's coming through an aveira. Shinemar, bavitem gazul v'yad apiseach v'yad achole. In other words, like, would you bring to the person, in other words, you're making an offering to, like, an officer. So would you bring him something which is stolen? You want to gift to a prince. Would you bring him that which is stolen, that which is lame, and that which is sick? So how can you bring that to a Kaddish Baruch Hu? So the Gemara says, Gazul do me to Piseach. So Gazul is coming to Piseach, the lame. Ma Piseach late takanta. Just like lame has no takana, lame is never good. It's lame is history. He says, Af Gazul late takanta. So too, something which is stolen has no takana. Let's see Rashi. Af Gazul, the third line Rashi, Yafimina, the Elo takana la farzman. Means I never has a takana after time. Rafilu be Yeish, even if it's with Yeish. We heard the owner said, "I gavalt, I'm never going to get my lulav back. It's stolen." He says, "Even though the Gemara says I'm konu yesh today, I can't offer it as an offering to a Kaddish Baruch Hu." So the Gemara is saying that something which is gazol. So the first day, I need something which I own. But the Gemara is saying, but in addition to which, is another problem that's mitzvah ba'baveira. So even lu yetzur, the victim may seyish, it's still mitzvah ba'baveira, a mitzvah that came about through an aveira. And lulav is to bring ritzui for a kadosh baruch hu. We're using it to propitiate Hashem. So I can't, Hashem detests, and we'll just see in a minute, or you'll see tomorrow. He says, he hates gezel ba'ola. Let's see in a minute. He says, so before Yeish, I understand it should be your korban, it's not yours. But after Yeish, you were cornered with Yeish. But it's because of mitzvah ba'baveira, and that's why it's history. Okay, now let's just see here. Okay, he's got a story. Michael never likes the stories, but tough luck. We're going to do it today.
Did I ask a question before the story?
Why
did Tana decide to begin with the lulav, even though the pasuk says in the parsha it starts with the priyetz hadar? So why did the Mishtana decide to start with the lulav?
Oh, good question. I would say like this. He said, okay, Pesach Tav is asking, well, the Tana is going to speak about all four minim. In the pasuk, the first minim that's mentioned is the etro. So why does the Tana begin with lulav is what Pesach Tav is asking. So I would say that lulav, remember, is the most important in the meaning because that's the one we make the bracha on, right? I'll feel lulav. And I think, let's say one second. This Tosos. One second, let me take a look. Which Tosos, top one? Oh, yeah. But I think there is a Tosos that discusses this. One second. Give me 1 second. One second. Anyway, but it's related to the fact that lulav towers over all the other minim, and in fact, we make the bracha on the field lulav. We don't make the bracha on the field of the arba minim. We don't make the bracha on the field of the esro. So that's why I think it begins with the lulav.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Michael's looking in. Michael has some reasons from the Rabbi Steinsaltz. What do you got?
So like you said, the bracha.
Yeah.
Right. In addition, three of the species, the lula, the willow, myrtle, are bound together.
Right.
They constitute the bulk of the components.
All right. Okay, sort of related to the other thing. Yeah, go.
The halacha of three species similar, while the other has several halacha unique.
All right. Well, now, I'm going to do a story. He gets into this, but the... Okay, he talks over here about what we're talking about. How could it be like you have an eclipse and things like that? How could that be something bad? So he says everything depends on time. And it, like, remember I said from the Ruchlan Air that certain times are auspicious, some things are inauspicious. So Ruchlan Lubavitz wrote that people hit upon a deep truth when they feel that time is of great significance. This is a great part of our avodah revolves around preparing ourselves to receive the positive spiritual influences that descend at particular times of the day, of the week, of the month, and the year. Now, our daf is saying the eclipse represents the inverse of this, a time designated by Hashem during which he expresses his anger, chas v'shalom. This parallels the affinity the 3 weeks of Bein HaMitzarim has for catastrophe lahavdil. Okay, we get the idea with this. Now, many Gedolei Yisrael pointed out that World War I, which was really the prelude for World War II, and the destruction of the European Jewry, began in Tisha B'Av. Fewer people are aware that World War I was marked by another inauspicious sign. Once, and he's going to explain, once Rabbi Eliyahu Lupian Zatzal, and he was a Baal Musar, I think he passed away around 1970, was learning Parshas Bereishis with his young grandson. When they reached the Pasuk, Vayulo Totalim Moedim Yamim L'Shanim, that the heavenly bodies will be for signs, festivals, for days, for years, they read Rashi's words, there'll be signs. This teaches that when the luminaries are eclipsed, it's a bad omen for the world. The Rav paused and said, on the 29th of Av, August 21st, 1914, well, we're August 5th now. He says, but it's the 29th of Av. That's almost exactly where we are now. What's the Hebrew date today? Boy, look at that. There was a full solar eclipse that made it look as dark as night outside. On the very next day, Germany won its greatest victory on the Eastern Front of the entire war, the Battle of Tannenberg against Russia. Okay, that's it for today. Let me end the recording, and then we'll talk 1 second. Okay, I'll see you hopefully next week. 1 second.